Hello and welcome into this Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host, for this hour of observation, insight, and a bit of absurdity for Thursday, the 8th day of October 2020. It is the morning after. Hey, no, I'm not talking about that song, the theme song from the movie. It's the morning after the VP debate, and I've been scanning the news, trying to find stories with some semblance of sanity, things that we can talk about today. Eh, there's a little bit out there. We'll touch on it today, and who knows where we'll go with it, because quite honestly, I'm not really sure where we're going to go with it quite yet, because there's just so much to talk about. My wife and I watched the debate last night, and we hit the power button on everything at 9. We gave up after the hour, and we didn't miss an awful lot. But fortunately, there is lots of material, lots of resources. There are lots of resources online to access the following day in order to get a clear picture of what things were like. And that combined with the hour that we watched, I'm pretty much where I need to be. And I'm honestly of the opinion that very, 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 very few people in this particular election season are going to be influenced by the debates. They're just not. Those of us who are supporters of Donald Trump already understand the man. We know his personality. We know his style. We know that he is not a slick politician. We know that he does not comport himself in that way when he is speaking in public. He is just who he is. He is not a political animal. And when we watch what we watched last night, we see on our screens two different breeds of political animal. And it further illustrates to us why we are either in one camp or another. It reinforces our opinions rather than changes our opinions. I really, really don't think anyone who should be trusted with the vote will have been influenced in any way last night to change their opinion. Those who you probably shouldn't trust with the vote, on the other hand, oh, those people, you just never know. And there's a lot to be said about last night's debate, and we will say a bit. You and I will chat about it a bit today. But first up, why I wasn't here yesterday. I just had to take a day. Sometimes that happens to the best of us. And yesterday I got up. Actually, I don't remember turning my alarm off, but I did. And my wife came and drug me out of bed, said, hey, you know, it's way past this time. Are you getting up? And I got out of bed. I drug myself out of bed. And you know that feeling that you have when you you sleep longer, much longer than you should have? For example, like you take a nap in the afternoon and it really slams you to the floor and you have a lot of trouble getting yourself restarted again. If that happens to you, you know what I'm talking about. I had that feeling when I got up yesterday morning. I just was having a lot of trouble functioning. And once I woke up and I got some coffee in me, I realized, wow, there's something happening here. I just don't feel well at all. And, I was foggy. I was disoriented. I just didn't feel good. And so I made a judgment call and pulled the plug on the podcast and just decided to sit with my little buddy, Kimber the Wonder Dog, and nap and rest and take it easy yesterday. And that's what I did, because I really felt very, very off, just off, not good at all. Today, I'm about as close to abnormal as I can be. So apparently that's what I needed yesterday. I don't know what was going on, but wow, I felt pretty rough yesterday. But today, not so bad, not so bad. Now last night I felt pretty bad. I really did. Let's see, what else is there? Oh yeah. Speaking of Kimber the Wonder Dog, My sweet little buddy got hurt yesterday somehow, or last night somehow. I think what happened, and I'm not sure about this, I think what happened is that she got caught someplace where she shouldn't have been. She tends to hang out underneath the footrest of our recliners in the living room. And we'll be sitting there watching TV like we did last night. We were watching the debate and other things. We watched a bunch of funny YouTube videos leading up to the debate. And then we hit the debate and, wow, I wish we were watching YouTube videos. And at one point, Jane got up to go down the hall or something, and I heard this yelp, and she had managed to snag Kimber under the footrest. And I think, I'm not sure, but I think she may have, we may have a cracked leg bone or something, because she's very tender today. She was very tender last night. She's yelping at every touch. She's obviously in a great deal of pain. And so a little bit later today, we'll be taking a visit to the vet to have her checked out, to make sure she's okay, to basically just to see what's wrong and what needs to be done to help her out, because she's obviously in a lot of pain. And that's terrible. When you got a little buddy like that who, she doesn't understand what's going on, all she understands is that she hurts. And when that happens, you just, it just hurts your heart. So today we're heading to the vet to have her looked over to see what's going on. I say we, that'll be me. This afternoon, I'll be taking little Princess Shaggy Feet to the vet, because she's really obviously, she's not even here with me today. She usually comes to the studio with me, and her chair is currently empty. She usually just naps right next to me, and I reach over and scratch her behind the ears during the course of the program. She just lays there and wags her tail. And when it's time to go, she's ready to go. Actually, some days she tells me, like, you've been in here for a long time. And she actually gets up and stands up in the chair and just looks at me like, are you ready to go yet? Because I am. But I'll let you know about her tomorrow. Okay. All right. We're about 7.5 minutes into the podcast, and I haven't said anything really substantive. So let's continue the trend. I think we should, because, you know, I like to talk about something absurd if I possibly can. And I think this meets that. I think it meets that standard. Now, we know that President Donald Trump has been nominated 3 times now for the Nobel Peace Prize. He's done some amazing things. He's gotten some peace treaties put together, and Middle Eastern tensions are at an all-time low, and he's really made some impressive accomplishments in this year. Well, the World Health Organization right now, they stood as the bookies' favorite, at least yesterday, to win the 2020 Nobel Peace Prize. Experts tipping Greta Thunberg as a strong outside contender, along with a host of UN subsidiaries. U.S. President Donald Trump's chances have been dismissed by at least one observer because, quote, he hasn't done anything that is deserving of the prize, end quote. Really? Well, apparently that observer has been under a rock all year. Only the direct number of potential awardees is known thus far. This year, there are 318 nominees, including 211 individuals and 107 organizations. That's according to the Nobel Institute. As AFP reports, this has not stopped observers from adding their speculation to that of the bookies. Henrik Erdahl, he's the director of the Peace Research Institute of Oslo, told the wire services he can't see Donald Trump emerging at the head of the crowded field, saying Trump is more likely to get the Nobel Prize in Literature for his tweets than to get the Nobel Peace Prize. And that's not because he's Donald Trump. That's because he hasn't done anything that is that's deserving of the prize. As I said, this guy's been under a rock. Greta Thunberg was favorite last year. However, it went to Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed for helping to end a 20-year post-war stalemate with Eritrea. Now, see, that's a person and a place you've never heard of. But they got the Nobel Peace Prize. And when Greta Thunberg was a favorite, that should have been your clue that this is absurdity at its best. When a teenager who is just doing everything she can to snag the limelight so she can harangue people older than her about the climate, which she does not understand, because she's been fed a lot of climate theory and propaganda, a lot of fear-mongering, and she's trying to help them frighten the world with stories that have their basis in fantasy rather than fact, when she's the odds-on favorite for a while to be the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, you know how legitimate that Peace Prize actually is. Yikes. Nobel historian Essel Sveen said Greta is back again as a possible candidate. Absolutely. She'd be the second youngest laureate in the Nobel Prize's almost 120-year history, after the Pakistani advocate for girls' education, Malala Yousafzai. Yousafzai. I can't even pronounce that name. There's too many consonants in it. The coronavirus pandemic has pushed the WHO to the top of the online betting sites, just ahead of Greta. Yet just how this equates to its performance has not been explained. I don't need to go any further with the article. If you'd like to read the rest of it, it'll be in show notes today. So get the show notes. Go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com. I post the show notes right after I get through recording every day. So by the time you hear this, it's there. So here's the thing. If Greta Thunberg is a seriously considered candidate, and the WHO is a seriously considered candidate, after the way they've botched the coronavirus, after the way they have ignored reality and misinformed the world about things, then you know that the Nobel Peace Prize is basically just a worthless chunk of metal. And that's about what it is. The Nobel Peace Prize is awarded to the most progressive person on the list, usually. And it is progressives patting other progressives on the back for being good progressives. It's really not much more than that. And that's something we should all remember, because it really doesn't value, it doesn't add value or denote any value to any person or organization. It may give you a warm, fuzzy feeling. Oh, that's nice. They got the Nobel Peace Prize. But when you look at the core ideology of the Nobel group, these people who award the prize, when you look at what they really believe and how they see the world around you, you realize that not winning the prize, if you were nominated for it, is really no biggie, because if you win the Nobel Peace Prize, odds are you're doing something really not substantive, and possibly you're doing something really wrong. So if President Trump doesn't win, and he won't, trust me, he won't win a Peace Prize this year. Nobody of his background, nobody who stands for what he believes in, will win the Nobel Peace Prize, because he believes in conservatism, and that goes against the grain of what the progressives want to do with the world. They want this to be one big happy world, one big happy planet. And in order for that to happen, they have to completely, well, it'll never happen, because they have to completely ignore the fact that there will always be people who want to conquer and rule. And those people will never be eliminated. They'll just go undercover, and they'll continue to plot and try to organize things. And to think otherwise is to deceive yourself, which is exactly what the progressives are doing. They want one big happy world. And the only way that one big happy world can happen is if someone rules over the world with an iron fist. And that's not what any thinking, honest human being wants. But then we're not dealing with thinking, honest human beings, are we? I don't think so. So just keep that in mind when President Trump doesn't win the Nobel Peace Prize again this year. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast, Thursday, October 8th. the morning after the VP debate. I got to say, it was a lot more civil exchange last night than it was for the presidential debate. And that, I think, is a good thing. And we watched last night two people who were seasoned politicians, so to speak. As I said earlier, they were two different breeds of politician. But still, two different politicians. And I think it's a good illustration. If you didn't watch it, go find it. It's going to be on YouTube today. You can just go search for it. I think you should probably go find it and actually watch it. Make sure you don't have anything heavy or sharp anywhere nearby when you do watch it, because I don't want you to throw anything at your TV or your computer and hurt it or ruin it, or I don't want you to cut up the furniture or yourself. But that would be whenever Kamala Harris is talking, because she was condescending, she was mean, she was, well, I mean, seriously.
I'm speaking.
I'm sorry, this is my show. The thing is that she has the same tell that Joe Biden has, and that is that every time Mike Pence scored with something that was absolutely, fundamentally, provably, demonstrably true, she shook her head and had this big smile. that's just ridiculous. And she was condescending. She was rude. She was not nice. Not nice at all. And I've got a stack of references here about the five biggest false misleading statements that were made by her at the debate. We'll get to that shortly. But first up, one more absurd thing, okay? Can we just have one more absurd thing? And let's see what else. Oh, yeah, there was that, and we'll get back to Kamala Harris, okay? I know. Just consider it a warning. George Stephanopoulos, or Snuffleupagus, whatever his name is, on ABC last night, brought in ABC's chief medical correspondent, Jennifer Ashton. The reason he brought her in was to examine Vice President Mike Pence's eye during the network's post-vice presidential debate coverage. He had a bloodshot eye. This happens. Could be caused by anything. But ABC, desperate for anything, anything sensational to talk about, anything sensational that they could throw at Mike Pence, brought in their medical expert to talk about Mike Pence's eye.
Before we get to more on that, I do, though, want to bring in Dr. Jen Ashton, because it was all over social media during the debate. A lot of people noticing that Mike Pence appeared to have some kind of pink eye. What did you notice?
Well, George, you're not going to be surprised to hear me say this, but of course, no one can make any diagnosis over TV. But what do we know about ocular or eye manifestations in COVID? It has been reported, even though it's limited in the medical literature, that anywhere from 11 to 30% of COVID positive patients can have pink eye. It can be an early sign. But George, he also could have just had some makeup in his eye.
Right. So we've put the questions to the vice president's office. We'll see what they say about
what you have just heard is desperation. These people are so desperate to find anything sensational they can. So desperate that they're talking about the vice president having a bloodshot eye. That's desperation. They want anything to talk about. He had a bloodshot eye. That's like these people talking about a fly landing on his head. I don't know. I saw people talking about the fly on Mike Pence's head, but I never saw anybody talk about the bloodshot eye. And I was all over social media. I was on Twitter and Facebook last night. I was watching. I was clipping and quoting and all kinds of things last night. If you followed me on the social media page on Facebook last night, you saw me quoting a lot of people who were making observations, and I was making observations along with them. But I never saw the bloodshot eye. Never thought it was an issue. I mean, the way I looked at it was, when I looked at the pictures, the blow-ups this morning, I thought, well, maybe, I don't know, does he wear contacts? If you've ever worn contacts and you've had an issue, like, oh, great, I just jabbed myself in the eye putting in my contact. That happens. That can cause a bloodshot eye. There's any number of reasons he could have a bloodshot eye, but COVID.
COVID!
Yes, we've got to stoke the flames of fear. Oh, my gosh. Well, why? Because it's necessary to keep the fear of COVID alive. And they're right now they're talking about, oh, the president, he's spreading COVID in the White House. It's a horrible thing. It should be stopped. Well, yesterday, President Trump delivered a message.
Hi, perhaps you recognize me. It's your favorite president. And I'm standing in front of the Oval Office at the White House, which is always an exciting place to be. I got back a day ago from Walter Reed Medical Center. I spent 4 days there and didn't have to. I could have stayed at the White House, but the doctor said, because you're president, let's do it. I said, fine. You tell me what to do, and I'm going to listen. These are great professionals. They've done a fantastic job. And by the way, not only at Walter Reed, all over the country, we have the greatest doctors in the world. We have the greatest nurses, the greatest first responders, law enforcement, by the way.
Yes, we do.
Incredible. Firefighters, everybody. They're just great. We have great people. This is a great country. But I spent 4 days there, and I went in. I wasn't feeling so hot. And within a very short period of time, they gave me Regeneron. It's called Regeneron. And other things, too, but I think this was the key. But they gave me Regeneron, and it was, like, unbelievable. I felt good immediately. I felt as good 3 days ago as I do now. So I just want to say we have Regeneron. We have a very similar drug from Eli Lilly, and they're coming out, and we're trying to get them on an emergency basis. We've authorized it. I've authorized it. And if you're in the hospital and you're feeling really bad, I think we're going to work it so that you get them and you're going to get them free. And especially if you're a senior, we're going to get you in there quick. We have hundreds of thousands of doses that are just about ready. I have emergency use authorization all set, and we got to get it signed now. And you're going to get better. You're going to get better really fast. This is things that nobody even thought of a few months ago. The job that the scientists, the labs, everybody have done is incredible. Then in addition to that, you have various other drugs that help a lot, but these, I view these, I know they call them therapeutic, but to me, it wasn't therapeutic. It just made me better, okay? I call that a cure. So I want to get these things done. So we have to get them done. We have to get them approved. I want to get them to the hospitals where people are feeling badly. That's much more important to me than the vaccine. But on the vaccines, we have many companies that are in final stages for the vaccines, Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, Pfizer, all great companies, but many of them. And we're going to have a great vaccine very, very shortly. I think we should have it before the election, but frankly, the politics gets involved, and that's okay. They want to play their games. It's going to be right after the election. But we did it, nobody else. Nobody else would have been able to do it. The FDA has acted as quickly as they've ever acted in history. There's never been a time, and no president's ever pushed them like I pushed them either, to be honest with you. But the FDA is approving things in a matter of weeks that used to take a matter of years. So we have these drugs, Eli Lilly and the others that are so good, but they are, in my opinion, remember this, they're going to say that they're therapeutic, and I guess they are therapeutic. Some people don't know how to define therapeutic. I view it different. It's a cure. For me, I walked in, I didn't feel good. A short 24 hours later, I was feeling great. I wanted to get out of the hospital. And that's what I want for everybody. I want everybody. Because I feel great. I feel like perfect. So I think this was a blessing from God that I caught it. This was a blessing in disguise. I caught it. I heard about this drug. I said, let me take it. It was my suggestion. I said, let me take it. And it was incredible the way it worked, incredible. And I think if I didn't catch it, we'd be looking at that like a number of other drugs. But it really did a fantastic job. I want to get for you what I got, and I'm going to make it free. You're not going to pay for it. It wasn't your fault that this happened. It was China's fault. And China's going to pay a big price what they've done to this country. China's going to pay a big price what they've done to the world. This was China's fault. And just remember that. So we're going to get you the drug. It's going to be free. We're going to get it into the hospitals as soon as you can, as soon as we can. And you'll see some amazing things happen because we have our military is doing the distribution. It's called logistics. And they deliver hundreds of thousands of troops in a matter of days. This is easy stuff for them. Our generals all ready. We're waiting for the emergency use authorization. And the drug companies have just made a lot of it. So hopefully this is going to be not just a therapeutic. It's going to be much more than a therapeutic. You're going to get better. You're going to get better fast, just like I did. So again, a blessing in disguise. Good luck.
President Trump speaking to America yesterday. A blessing in disguise. He agreed to subject himself to experimental drugs to be a guinea pig for you and me. This is the guy we got to put back in office. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. You might have noticed the bumper music has changed a bit. Two reasons. One, I was getting tired. Even though that library is pretty deep, I kept hearing the same music again and again, and I hear it every day. It's time for a change. Two, I was also getting tired of Facebook dinging me every time one of the pieces of classic rock ran long enough that their computers could recognize it, and then they'd silence the broadcast. They'd silence that however long it was. Well, I may go back to it after a while, but for now, I've got licensed stuff here that I can use, and that's good stuff. All right. Let's see. Where were we? Oh, yes. We were talking about the debate last night, and now we go to someone's take on the debate who consistently surprises me that he is still employed by news networks. Because so often I've observed this guy talking about things and making a judgment on things, and I just have to, my eyebrows jam together, and I'm going, where's he getting this from? He's getting this from a room full of people who have little controls in their hands and they're twisting dials whether they approve or disapprove of something, and where the, what we, a tiny group of people that may or may not represent America. You know what I mean? The guy's name is Frank Luntz. You may have seen the guy. He's been on Fox News for ages. Every time they want to know what's happening, they say, let's put a focus group together. Get Frank Luntz on the line. Well, he told Fox News following the VP debate last night that Vice President Mike Pence was the winner of the debate. Saying that voters were turned off by Harris is condescending and abrasive attitude toward Pence. And yeah, he was right.
I'm speaking. Yeah, I'm speaking.
It's my podcast. But she was condescending. She was abrasive. And she demonstrated why, among other reasons, why Democrats turned their backs on her during the primaries. And this is something you need to remember, and that is that the Democrats did not like Kamala Harris, especially after Tulsi Gabbard had her way with her at one of the debates because she revealed Kamala Harris for who and what she actually is. And people said, ew. And it all went downhill from there. The complaint about Kamala Harris, says Luntz, was that she was abrasive and condescending. The complaint about Mike Pence was that he was too tired, but he was vice presidential or presidential. And if this is a battle over style and substance, which is often the case with undecided voters because they simply do not choose on policy, they also choose on persona, this was Mike Pence's night. Luntz said that voters disliked the candidates dodging questions, but overall they were much happier with the way the debate went versus the way the first debate went. Luntz said that while voters were frustrated with the vice president for repeatedly running over his allotted time, Harris's reactions to Pence, the smiling, the smirking, the scowling, that left him far angrier with her performance. He says voters were more agitated with Kamala's presentation than they were with Mike Pence. Now, let me jump in here and say this. He speaks about them not liking Pence running over his time. Kamala Harris also ran over her time repeatedly. I would say almost as much as Mike Pence did. And there was actually one time when she got a freebie. She got a rebuttal that she just insisted on having that Pence never got time for. So let's keep things in balance and perspective here, because Kamala Harris was just as abusive of talking over time as Mike Pence was. Now, if you want to hold a stopwatch to it, you can go ahead and waste your time. But the bottom line is they both kept talking when the moderator kept saying, thank you, as if to say, shut up. Luntz said the voters were more agitated with Kamala's presentation than they were with Mike Pence. He says, I'll be blunt with you. If there are no more presidential debates, then Joe Biden is the next president of the United States. And I have no hesitation in saying that. I know that there will be eruptions all over 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Donald Trump needs those debates to bring the answers that he has to the challenges that Joe Biden has to the American people. Without that, Joe Biden can coast. Doesn't need to go to events. And he wins based on the current polling numbers. So Trump needs debates. However, I have faith in the presidential commission that they will do the right thing. And the people on that commission will put their country ahead of their party. And that's brilliant. I don't have that confidence, by the way. And he says he wins, that Biden wins based on current polling numbers. Well, the current polling numbers, as we discussed the other day, are bogus. The current polling numbers are based on an oversampling, 45% to 34% Democrat. That's the current polling numbers, that NBC poll that put Joe Biden so far ahead. It's a bogus poll. And this is one reason I don't have any confidence in Frank Luntz's predictions about elections. When it comes to seeing what people think in the moment, he's really good at that, because he has a system which works well for that. But when it comes to actually the overall view, the 30,000-foot view, Frank Luntz is an idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's making, in this particular instance, this is a good example of why. He'll make a judgment based on something fraudulent. So you can't trust Frank Luntz's take when it comes down to him boiling things down to the bottom line, because his bottom line is just not on the money. Now, there were several great moments from the VP debate, but the one moment where Pence left Kamala Harris speechless was, some are saying, was incredible.
He will not raise taxes on anybody who makes less than $400,000 a year.
He said he's going to repeal the Trump tax cuts.
Mr. Vice President, I'm speaking.
Well,
I'm speaking.
It'd be important if you said the truth. Right. Joe Biden said twice in the debate last week that he's going to repeal the Trump tax cuts.
Yeah,
that was tax cuts that gave the average working family $2,000 in a tax break every single year.
That is absolutely not true.
Is he only going to repeal part of the Trump tax cuts?
If you don't mind letting me finish, we can then have a conversation. Okay?
Please.
Okay.
So he cornered her and he nailed her on the Biden tax plan. Another great moment was the exchange where Pence directly asked Kamala about packing the court, and she absolutely refused to answer the question.
President Trump says that he's going to protect people with pre-existing conditions, but he has not explained how he would do that. And that was one of the toughest nuts to crack when they were passing the Affordable Care Act. So tell us specifically, how would your administration protect Americans with pre-existing conditions have access to affordable insurance if the Affordable Care Act is struck down?
Well, thank you, Susan. But let me just say, addressing your very first question, I couldn't be more proud to serve as vice president to a president who stands without apology for the sanctity of human life. I'm pro-life. I don't apologize for it. And this is another one of those cases where there's such a dramatic contrast. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris support taxpayer funding of abortion all the way up to the moment of birth, late-term abortion. They want to increase funding to Planned Parenthood of America. Now, for our part, I would never presume how Judge Amy Coney Barrett would rule on the Supreme Court of the United States, but we'll continue to stand strong for the right to life. When you speak about the Supreme Court, though, I think the American people really deserve an answer, Senator Harris. Are you and Joe Biden going to pack the court if Judge Amy Coney Barrett is confirmed?
There's the question.
I mean, there have been 29 vacancies on the Supreme Court during presidential election years, from George Washington to Barack Obama. Presidents have nominated in all 29 cases. But your party is actually openly advocating adding seats to the Supreme Court, which has had 9 seats for 150 years, if you don't get your way. This is a classic case of, if you can't win by the rules, you're going to change the rules. Now, you've refused to answer the question. Joe Biden has refused to answer the question. So I think the American people would really like to know, if Judge Amy Coney Barrett is confirmed to the Supreme Court of the United States, are you and Joe Biden, if somehow you win this election, going to pack the Supreme Court to get your way?
I'm so glad we went through a little history lesson. Let's do that a little more. In 1864...
Well, I'd like you to answer the question.
No, Mr. Yes, Vice President, I'm speaking. Please. I'm speaking. Okay. In 1864, one of the, I think, political heroes, certainly of the president, I assume of you also, Mr. Vice President, is Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Abraham Lincoln was up for re-election, and it was 27 days before the election, and a seat became open on the United States Supreme Court. Abraham Lincoln's party was in charge not only of the White House, but the Senate. But Honest Abe said, it's not the right thing to do. The American people deserve to make the decision about who will be the next president of the United States, and then that person can select who will serve for a lifetime on the highest court of our land. And so Joe and I are very clear. The American people are voting right now, and it should be their decision about who will serve on this most important body for a lifetime.
Thank you, Senator Harris.
People, Susan, are voting right now. They'd like to know if you and Joe Biden are going to pack the Supreme Court if you don't get your way in this nomination.
Let's talk about packing.
You once again gave a non-answer. Joe Biden gave a non-answer.
I'm trying to answer you
now.
The
American people deserve a straight answer. And if you haven't figured it out yet, the straight answer is they are going to pack the Supreme Court if they somehow win this election. Men and women, I got to tell you, people across this country, if you cherish our Supreme Court, if you cherish the separation of powers, you need to reject the Biden-Harris ticket. Come November the 3rd, re-elect President Donald Trump, and we'll stand by that separation powers in a 9-seat Supreme Court.
Yeah, let's talk about packing the court then. Let's talk about the pack. Yeah, I'm about to.
And there was more. If you'd like to, if you didn't see it last night, get the show notes today. The clips are all in the show notes. They're in the stories. So check it out for yourself. She dodged. She tried to tell a little history lesson. She tried to condescendingly explain things to the American people, and she failed. She went back to Abe Lincoln. Well, this is not Abe Lincoln's time. It's a different time. And we have an issue ahead of us right now. The question was packing the courts. It was not about deciding the current person. It was about packing the courts. Which is why it's important to have a real conservative on the court to keep that from happening. And here we go. Sliding into the final segment for this Thursday, the 8th day of October 2020, on the Daily Perspective Podcast. It's all debate all the time. You know, I love me some Just Facts Daily. And I share it on social media almost every day. And they have a question of the day that I pass along to you here on the podcast from time to time. And the one for today is, do Joe Biden and Kamala Harris plan to legalize abortions on humans who are capable of living outside the womb? Yes or no? Well, contrary, the answer is yes. Contrary to the claims of several fact-checkers, Biden and Harris do plan to legalize abortions on humans who are capable of living outside the womb all the way up until birth. In their own words, they will do this by codifying Roe v. Wade, which prohibits states from banning abortions at any stage of pregnancy if Any abortionist claims it is for the health of the mother. Some examples of how Roe defines threats to the health of the mother include the work of child care, the stigma of unwed motherhood, the distress of parenting an unwanted child. In 1992, the Supreme Court ruled in Planned Parenthood versus Casey that Roe's essential holding be retained and reaffirmed, including a confirmation of the state's power to restrict abortions after viability. If the law contains exceptions for pregnancies endangering a woman's life or health. Since then, many states have passed laws that defy Roe and Casey, and Biden and Harris say they will repeal all of them through federal law. So yes, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris do plan to legalize abortions on humans who are capable of living outside the womb. They do. The actual facts state so. Not the political pandering, not the positioning, not the mental gymnastics they require to explain themselves out of the corner they're in. The facts say, yes, they do. Don't forget that. Now, Democratic vice presidential nominee, Senator Kamala Harris, rated the most far left senator last year, made numerous false or misleading statements during the debate last night against Vice President Mike Pence. The 90-minute debate in Salt Lake City came after President Donald Trump and Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden squared off in their first debate last week. The debate between Pence and Harris was significantly more civil, with fewer interruptions from both candidates and less interference from the moderator. Many of the fact checks that were published after the debate focused almost exclusively on comments that Pence made and most ignored comments that Harris made. For example, ABC News published a fact check report that evaluated 12 statements made by Pence, but only one statement made by Harris. CBS News evaluated 6 statements made by Pence and only 3 made by Harris. Other fact checks that were available online were done in a similar way. However, Harris made dozens of false or misleading statements during the debate. The Trump campaign, for example, counted at least 24. Here are 5 false or misleading statements that were made by Kamala Harris during last night's debate. 1. The president said coronavirus was a hoax. This is not true and has repeatedly been debunked by the Washington Post, the Associated Press, CNN, PolitiFact, factcheck.org, and Check Your Fact. 2. Harris said the American people know that Joe Biden will not ban fracking. That is a fact. That is a fact. Biden and Harris have both repeatedly expressed support for getting rid of fracking. Biden has said that there would be no place in his administration for fossil fuels, and he would make sure they are eliminated. Biden also is on video saying, I guarantee you we're going to end fossil fuels. Harris, on the other hand, said during a CNN town hall that there's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking. 3. Kamala Harris said Joe Biden is the one who, during the Great Recession, was responsible for the Recovery Act that brought America back. And now the Trump-Pence administration wants to take credit when they rode the coattails of Joe Biden's success for the economy that they had at the beginning of their term. Of course, now the economy is a complete disaster, but Joe Biden, on the one hand, did that. On the other hand, you have Donald Trump, who has reigned over a recession that is being compared to the Great Depression. It is true that the economy was generally trending the right way under the Obama administration after the administration had the slowest economic recovery since World War II. However, when Biden claimed in the first debate that the Obama administration left the Trump administration a booming economy and Trump caused the recession, the New York Times rated that statement as false. Remember, this is the New York Times. Here's what they said. The economy was not booming in the final year of Mr. Biden's time as vice president, and Mr. Trump did not cause the pandemic recession. When President Barack Obama and Mr. Biden left office, the economy was healthy, though growth had dipped below 2% in 2016, in part because of a contraction in business investment stemming in part from a plunge in oil prices rippling through America's energy industry. Unemployment had fallen steadily. Under Mr. Trump, economic growth accelerated from 2016, spurred by the fiscal stimulus of tax cuts and increased government spending and continued monetary stimulus from the Federal Reserve. The first 3 years of Mr. Trump's presidency were similar in terms of economic and job growth to the first 3 years of Mr. Obama's second term. The coronavirus pandemic plunged the United States into recession this spring. Mr. Biden and others have criticized Mr. Trump's response to it, blaming him for deaths and the virus and a contraction in economic activity. But there's no evidence Mr. Trump's actions caused the recession. Every major wealthy country in the world has experienced a sharp economic contraction along with its outbreak of the virus. Number four. Harris said the Obama-Biden administration created within the White House an office that basically was responsible for monitoring pandemics. The Trump-Pence administration got rid of it. This is misleading. USA Today noted that the notion that Trump got rid of the whole thing is not accurate. Quote, the Directorate of Global Health Security and Biodefense was disbanded under Trump's then National Security Advisor John Bolton. That's what the USA Today reported. But they go on to say, but Trump didn't fire its members. Some resigned and others moved to different units on the National Security Council. And finally, number five, Kamala Harris said, and on the other side, there were neo-Nazis carrying tiki torches, shouting racial epithets and anti-Semitic slurs. And Donald Trump, when asked about it, said there were fine people on both sides. This is a lie that has been repeatedly debunked. Trump specifically condemned neo-Nazis and white nationalists, saying they should be condemned totally. Kamala Harris, during last night's VP debate, told the Charlottesville lie, a bald-faced, debunked, disproven lie. And the reason that she did is because all they have to use against Donald Trump is lies. And the racism lie is very effective. Because, as I've told you before, progressivism cannot exist unless there is victimhood. There has to be a class of victims in order to justify the existence of progressivism. Progressivism plays on the emotion that you are downtrodden, the emotional feeling, the despair of being downtrodden and oppressed. And progressive politicians play the part of being the hero for the downtrodden and the oppressed. Without a victim class, the Democrat Party could not exist. Because everything they preach is their heroism on behalf of the victim. And so, lying politicians like Kamala Harris will continue to point at Donald Trump and accuse him of the very fine people lie. A lie which has been, as I've said, debunked, disproven, and put to rest, hopefully many times. But it keeps getting resurrected by liars like Kamala Harris. She and those like her will continue to resurrect this lie. They will continue to drag it from its grave and trot it out before people, because they know that a significant number of people who have the right to vote will not check up on what they say. They will simply believe the lie because it satisfies them on an emotional level. people with intellect, smart people, honest people, will do a little digging, and it won't take them long to find what has been said by every institution which has debunked this lie. But sadly, on the left, the Democrats know that there are enough people who won't check. So they continue to lie. And you see the response to those lies in social media every day. Time to go. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.